Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to call this meeting, the December 10th, 2015 meeting of the Northern Virginia Transportation Authority to order. Would Ms. Spear please call the roll?
Chairman Nellie?
Here.
Mayor Yule?
He's here. Oh, he is here.
Here.
Chairman Bulova? Supervisor Letourneau?
Here.
Chair Heinz?
Here.
Mayor Parrish?
Here.
Mayor Silverthorne? Councilmember Snyder? Councilmember Rochelle?
Here.
Senator Evans? Delegate Ross?
Here.
Delegate Minshew?
Here.
Mr. Garzinski? Ms. Bushview? Mayor Fraser? Ms. Cuervo?
Here.
Ms. Mitchell?
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
We have a quorum for meeting. We do not yet have a quorum for action. So we'll start with a non-action item. And Mr. Jasper, wherever. Talk to us about transaction.
Talk to you about transaction. Good evening. I was just loading the presentation. And so I just wanted to give you an update on the status of the development of transactions and also give you a full preview of some of the information we're going to be sharing early in 2016 at jurisdictional briefings around the region. Just a quick reminder of the mandate that you have for regional transportation planning. We are obviously there are many plans within the region for transportation, but transactions is the only truly regional plan for the region. Just want to quickly revisit some of the information that we gave you at the last meeting and some of the information that we tried to give you at the last meeting, but we were ushered out the door before we could do that. This slide is the one that reminds me why you pay me to come to work every day to try and do something to fix this problem. But from our transaction benchmark survey, this is what Northern Virginia residents told us was their typical travel experience. But at the same time, people want to live and work in Northern Virginia, and so in some ways congestion is somewhat of a measure of the region's success as well. So I can't be too down on congestion. Having said that, we do seem to be consistently ranked among the worst regions in the nation for congestion, and as the benchmark survey told us, that Northern Virginia residents who cite congestion as a detriment to their quality of life. And last month we used the word mediocre to describe how Northern Virginia residents feel when it comes to transportation affecting their quality of life. We asked Northern Virginia residents what's important to them from a transportation point of view. And how the region is performing. And in this graphic, the vertical column shows how well the region is performing. Things that are nearer to the top of the slide indicate areas where the performance is best. And along the horizontal scale, we have importance to Northern Virginia residents, where things to the right of the screen, right of the slide, are the things which are considered by Northern Virginians to be most important. Which is why that grey area off to the right was identified as containing the priority areas to focus on, those things which particularly importance was very high and where the performance was certainly in some cases below par, considered to be below par by Northern Virginians. Self-driving cars is a topic that we touched on in the benchmark survey, and while it's certainly seems futuristic in many regards, Northern Virginians, who clearly are very tech savvy bunch of people. 85% of them expect self-driving cars will be here in Northern Virginia in abundance in the next 20 years. And that's actually got quite a bit of importance for the plan, because 20 years from now, as you know, is 2035. The horizon year for our plan is 2040. So that means before we actually reach the horizon, most Northern Virginians think that self-driving cars will be a reality, and what's more than half of them have indicated they're likely to want to try self-driving cars. The region's travel demand models don't really address self-driving vehicles at the moment. That's something that we have to grapple with as we do this plan, and it's likely we'll probably look, when we look at scenario planning within the transaction update, that self-driving cars will maybe feature in one of those scenarios. So just going back to the specifics of transaction and where we are right now, I just want to touch on five topics that are shown here. So starting with the vision and goals, there is an action item on your agenda coming up shortly, hopefully, which is specifically looking for action from you regarding the vision and goals. So I don't want to steal any of Mr. Melos' thunder when he talks to this subject, but in this slide here, I just wanted to kind of conceptually explain why vision and goals are very important to the development of transaction. The vision and subsequently the goals, as you read here from left to right, really set the direction for transaction. With the vision being essentially your overarching aspiration for what the plan will help to achieve within the region. And the goals will kind of take that vision and break it down a little bit more, still be pretty high level. And then from the goals, we'll move to objectives. And there could be many of those. And ultimately on to measures and so on to help us actually prioritize projects. So there is a progression here, but it all starts with the vision and goals. So it's essential that we start with the right vision and goals, which is your vision and goals for the plan. Sadly, in the coming months, we hope through public engagement that anyone in Northern Virginia is so inclined will be able to weigh in on the development of objectives and associated measures. I'm just going to flash past this slide. This is the proposed vision for transactions that Mr. Mailer will talk about. I would just say in passing that it's very similar to the previous vision that we're proposing it replaces, but as Mr. Mailer will point out, there are some reasons to consider changing it this time. Just a quick reminder of the purpose of transactions. And we all know it's the long-range regional transportation plan, but increasingly, for the purposes of engaging the public in particular, we really want everyone to see it as a transportation action plan for Northern Virginia. As I mentioned, guided by your vision, it will ultimately, through the horizon year of 2040, provide a portfolio of multimodal transportation investments for the region. And we're very much set the stage for your inaugural six-year program from FY18 to FY23. As far as the scope is concerned, I won't get down into the weeds at this time. I think suffice to say that there are two main threats to the scope of work of transaction, which are very, very intertwined. The technical approach and the public outreach. The foundational research is actually pretty much complete, and we're beginning to move on to the identification of regional needs. Scenario planning and analysis will come much later in the process, probably about a year from now. But as we kind of move ahead in parallel, the public outreach is kind of seen in three phases. We're currently in that first phase, website and launch activities, and the jurisdictional briefings I mentioned earlier will kind of round out that first phase. And then during the spring and again in the fall, we'll have plenty of opportunities for public engagement and plenty of ways we're going to be doing that.
And then towards the end in the spring of 2017, we'll have formal hearings in a more traditional format.
So in terms of the milestones, the schedule for the work, draw your attention to the blue boxes, the top left and the bottom right. That's really where you have kind of a big role to play as an authority. You've already done the first one to the top left, to stop transactional last month. As I mentioned earlier, we're anticipating adoption sometime in the summer or fall of 2017. And in between, the boxes in red, they're the opportunities for public outreach that would tie in very much with the technical work that's going on at the same time. And in the winter, and about starting in about a year from now, we'll really be diving into the detail of the priorities and how that will feed through into the draft report. So it's a long range plan, right? I don't have to take it too seriously. It's not like changing the thing until 2040. We would argue that that's the wrong approach. We really think that it's tempting to think of a long range plan as being something that's kind of pushed off a little bit. For the three reasons stated here, we really don't think that's the case. It's the first update since the passage of HD 2313. There have been quite a few iterations of transactions before this one. Obviously, transaction 2040 is still the current plan. That replaced transaction 2030. And prior to that, not managed by MBTA, but there was a 2020 plan and a 2010 plan as well for North Virginia. And the big difference, obviously, between those four previous iterations and the current one is the current one is actually going to have a revenue stream. That can be used to actually fund the project or some of the projects that are in the plan. It's updated every 5 years. If projects are not included in this update, they'll have to wait another 5 years, and that will obviously mean that those projects that are not included will not be eligible to receive regional revenue. So it is very important. We hope you can kind of help us spread that word. So if you were wondering how to get involved, I have a slide for that. I would break this down into two parts, the ongoing launch activities and the upcoming engagement opportunities. These are the things which were kind of in the top row of that schedule I showed you earlier. Throughout this entire process, we'll have a variety of ongoing polls that are available on the website. I want to draw your attention to the contact cards that are just by your nameplate. If I could kind of lean on Chairman Noe, I could do the story.
All right, so almost everyone in this room works in transportation in some way or another. So what do we all have in common? What we all have in common is that people are constantly coming up to us saying, hey, you're in the Northern Virginia Transportation Authority. Are you working in the Transportation Department of Jurisdiction? And I'm just going to, who's going to pick on? I'm going to pick on Tom Shani. You work in the Fairfax County Transportation Department? Oh, I'm so glad to hear that, because I live in Alexandria and work in Falls Church, and traffic is loud and terrible. What are you going to do about it, Tom Shani? And here's your answer. And they got a statue. Look how upset I am. Watch this. That's why you need a statue of beans in your pocket. Because after years of work in the transportation field, you now have an answer to it. Now, and this staff is twice the stick a week. Now you'll say to me, hey, Marty, you're the chairman of the Northern Virginia Transportation Authority. What are you going to do about the fact that there's a problem in the road in my neighborhood? And we go, you know, that thing you're complaining about is the single worst transportation problem in the entire region. You are so right. You know what I need you to do? I need you to visit www.nvtatransactions.org. That's www.nvtatransactions.org. And there's going to be a user interface. And I need you to tell the NVTA that you and I agree that this problem is the single biggest problem in the region. So with feedback like that, we can get it integrated into transaction God, I would say 20-something, into the transaction plan, and it'll probably become the top priority of the entire region. And if you stand out enough of these cards, everything will become the top priority. So take a stack of cards you do today, and they're really cool, and this is the other thing I was thinking of doing. So there's one with a picture of a little trolley bus in Old Town, and there's one that's a picket or
elbow.
It's in my services. We have National Airport with a bus going out in front of it. We have a traffic jam on an otherwise unnamed interstate, but that's looking a lot like 56. I think this is with the mixing bowl where the hot lanes come together with the regular lanes in Springfield and the Sherlington Station. And then my favorite one is completely uncongested bike trail because it's doing such a good job of living together. And this is Wheelie Avenue. So are the metro stations. They're collectible. And then what I do is I ask the person where they live, and I go, oh, because there's this card. And they go, oh, you live in Alexandria. So Alexandria residents like yourself can take this card and go somewhere else. And you'd be amazed how much better conversations about how about traffic here are when you just get out of staff in these cards. So I think everyone has some at their place. And if you run out, which I promise you will very fast, if you just do it, Pamela will personally come bring more to your house.
Martin, I'm very concerned that you have two stacks of cards and I only have one.
I have four stacks of cards.
And we are doing the PSA, right?
A reminder, if you didn't catch it, it's ABCATransactions.org, and that's actually the same handle we use for our Twitter account, so feel free to go there as well. Follow us, retweet us, submit ideas, do the polls, and tell everyone you know, and tell them to tell everyone they know as well.
And if I could, let me do another little marketing thing. So it was, we were in the old building, but it was at one of these meetings, gosh, 3 or 4 years ago, when Garrett Morris, was the Northern Virginia District Administrator at the time, was sitting, sugar-wise, roughly where Helen's sitting now, but, and we were talking about something, and like the day before this big announcement, Transurban came up with this big announcement, there's no such thing as hot lanes anymore. Now we have the 95 express lanes. Like the word express lanes has been launched like the day before. And Garrett, I don't know the topic, but they became relevant in the conversation. And Garrett managed to use the word express lane in a sentence like 4 times without slipping to the word hot lane once. And I asked him how he did it. He says, because we've known for about a month and we've been practicing it. And I shared that story to say, you told me you almost blow it. There is no transaction 2080. It's just transaction now. So practice at home so that next month you don't screw it up when you do.
And just one more slide from the benchmark survey. You may remember this one. Thankfully, this one was in response to the question, what's your ideal travel experience? So it's not being set as an expectation for transaction, anything we do, although with your vision and approval of the goals, we'll hope that we'll be able to make a step into the right
direction. This is a London picture, right? This is a London picture. She's shifting on the left.
She's having on the right side of the road. Leave it to all of us, the visual people. Immediately just notice that.
I'll pick up.
That's it to get the British person.
I'm just moving quickly on. There's the website.
Okay, thank you. Any questions on the transaction? Okay, thank you. Coming back. So, we have another one of our item tonight is actually sort of a, what's that?
The minute.
Oh, wait, so we have the minutes of the November 12th meeting?
I move at 12.
I'm going to look for a while.
I like them, though.
Motion made by Chairwoman Hines, seconded by Chairwoman Bolivar. Any questions, discussion, changes? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That carries unanimous. Senator Mr. Letourneau, Mr. Parrish, Mr. Ruff, Mr. Snyder. Thank you.
I can bring a doctor.
I'll check it in. To that point, though, talking about people not being at meetings, I'd like to come now to the bittersweet part of our meeting. We have some presentations, and we've had to make some presentations like this a few times in the past, but frankly, never so many in one night, and never with such dramatic impact, I think, to the face of the authorities. So I'm going to take a few minutes, and start with my friend Tom Ross. Tom Russ has been a member of the authority since 2008. Actually, probably the longest-serving General Assembly member in the authority's history. He's had a number of General Assembly members. I'll give you a Tom. Tom has been truly tireless in his efforts to find solutions for transportation in Northern Virginia. I've told the story in a political, partisan political context a few times. First time I've actually got to tell it because it's the last meeting, so I can tell it however I want. February 29th, 2008, those of us who were around, like it was like the darkest day of our political careers, the Virginia Supreme Court overturned HB 3302. And it was heartbreaking. It was not the best word. This morning, Dave Snyder told a story about Tom Ruff's amazing ability to say, "Don't worry, it's all going to be okay." And in this case, he actually wasn't very reassuring, but I'll share this. The next morning, I got in my car. I got up at 5 in the morning and drove down to the General Assembly just what can we do about this? And it was just getting met with awkward foot staring the entire time. And I went to literally the doors of every legislator in Northern Virginia, and everyone was like, "Well, Mario, you got to understand, it was a compromise." And all the awkward things people say in moments like that. And Tom Ross looked at me and said, "I'm going to see what I can do." And he went onto the House of the floor and made a motion to retroactively impose the taxes. So this is the guy who stood up and said, "Okay, we screwed up in the way we implemented it, but the bill was a good bill. Let's just do it." And I don't know if it got more than a handful of votes.
Probably not.
But what was, and I'll tell you, he's not here tonight. Brian Gordon from the Apartment and Office Building Association was quoted in one of Tom's campaign mailers in the subsequent election saying, "Tom Ruff is the single most courageous member in the entire General Assembly and has done more to bring progress in Northern Virginia than anyone else would possibly be asked to do." And the reason I know he was quoted as saying this, I'm actually the one who said it, but I do think it was wise, because no one in Herndon really cares when I think about who their delegate is, so we let Brian Gordon say it instead. And Tom, another word of it, so does Brian. Tom, you have truly been our hero. And we would not be sitting here, and we would not be making a positive difference to the people in Northern Virginia who work for you. And you always have my undying gratitude. Thank you.
Thank you. Handsome guy right here.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it. This is a great group to work with. They do good work. I had a small part in it, but nothing gets done by one person. And really what we need to do, this region really needs to come together and to quote my friend Mark Warner, we need to set aside the R's and the D's at the front door and just do what's right for Virginia. And I think this group does that. And in my last official action, since I'm not going to be handing many of these out, I'm going to give them to Marty. Thank you very much.
We have a frame and a picture for Scott York, who couldn't be here tonight, but we'll find a way to get this in one way or the other. And by the way, everyone who gets one of these, Kamala has the packing material, if you want us to pack it up for you. Scott couldn't be here this evening. He had another appointment he had to deal with tonight. But I just want to say, Scott is...
You wanted me to say he had surgery today.
Yeah. I was going to say, because I think...
No, he's okay with that. So you want to make sure everybody knew that he had a legitimate appointment.
Let me let you know that Mr. Otero just committed a HIPAA violation.
I was just texting him. He said, okay. He said it's coming in store, but
he's not. He's not well. And he's gonna be fine. It's very minor thing. The surgery's very bad. He's gonna be fine. But he's gonna be. But I do want to say that just so that you can pass it on to the museum. Scott is one of the remaining original members of this body, going back to 2002. David, are you a very original member? Mr. Snyder and Mr. Parrish are the only other two. You came in 2003.
Was it three?
You were elected in 2003. Now I know that one. Scott is a cousin of yours, but Scott has truly been somebody who has absolutely been a part of this. He's, again, in the small group of people who were here through the HB 3202 time, and sort of helped lead us, was one of the folks carrying the flashlight through the forest during those period of time where we sat in rooms like this and had a lot of big ideas. I think he may have been the first person who used the phrase, paraphrasing Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz talking to the Scarecrow. Scott York says, well, what would you do with $300 million if you had it? And the truth is, Mr. Jasper was just talking about helping answer that question. And so he couldn't be here, but again, I want to thank Scott York for all of his service. It's, again, a little difficult, frankly, to imagine these moving forward in some ways without him, but I'm certain that we're going to do well because he's laid great groundwork for us. So let's give Scott a round of applause. The next person we want to recognize is our Vice Chairman, Mr. Bill Yule. Bill is one of our very, very long-standing members of this authority, going back to when he was first elected mayor in 2003, predating me on this authority. And again, somebody who went through the trenches with 3202 with us. And I think Bill and I were elected chair and vice chair at the meeting immediately preceding the Supreme Court decision. But I will say that Bill was one of the people who, again, another person we wouldn't be here without, because there was a long period of time, and some of you remember this, there were many, many meetings, and we didn't have a lot of meetings for a while, but when we had meetings, at most of them, there was a conversation about whether or not we should just not ask the General Assembly to just put us out of business. And Bill was somebody who recognized, if you put the authority out of business, if you just make us go away, the funding will never come. That we have to have the vehicle in place to make it happen. And it's been a consistent voice for saying, we cannot give up on this, that fixing our transportation network is not just the most important thing in many ways, it's the only thing that we do. Because everything else we do comes back to how well we do this. And we've had some good times, we've had some bad times, but I'll say over the last 3 years, it's been mostly good. And Bill, again, I cannot thank you enough for your service to the community and all of the region.
Bothered me all week, but suffice to say that I've enjoyed not only serving on MBTA, but MBTC and WMATA for 14 years on the WMATA board, and even Allegheny Transportation Commission, so I spend a lot of my time in my life dealing with transit, transportation, roads, bridges, everything else throughout the DMV, and it's important, and again, with transaction, that's why we need to do what we're doing, because we have to and make the congestion. And I'll still be active, not in elective office, but continue to advocate for those things that are right and important to each and every one of us. So, again, thank you.
Mr. Last but certainly not least, our friend Mary Hines, Marlon County. Mary is not one of our longest standing members, but has absolutely been one of our most engaged and active members in the short
2 years.
It feels like a really long time since I've been there. But I will say this, we were in a meeting the other day and I was talking about how we have a lot of change. We're going to experience a lot of change this year. From my perspective as chairman, actually maybe the biggest change, regardless of who's sitting in that chair next month. Mary came here, frankly, filling the seat of someone who'd been on this authority since before there was an authority, actually. Someone who, like Kelly, you've been coming to meetings for 3 years before there was a meeting to come to. But has really represented the interests of her community, not just the community that happens to live in Arlington County, but the people that pass through Arlington County, the people that recreating Arlington County, to be able to transact business in Arlington County, and has really helped the people of in this room and people throughout this region understand and benefit from the progressive and dynamic way in which Arlington County plans. And there is no question in my mind that when we look at the things that have come out of the Project Implementation Working Group, the things that have come out of the Finance Committee, the things that we're going to see in transactions, things that we've seen in all of our project lists, the bylaws that we'll be talking about later tonight and hopefully adopting next month, in that 2 years, Mary Hines has left an extraordinary footprint behind. And once again, it is work that has work that we could not have provided down there. And again, thanks on behalf of everyone in Northern Virginia. Thank you for all of your questions.
It has been an amazing 2 years. I think I started in February of 2014 when Chris stepped down, and I have enjoyed every bit of it. And let me echo what Tom said. You know, this is the body of all the things that I serve on where we check our jurisdictional focus without checking our jurisdictional needs at the door. And we actually engage in the right kind of conversation. Because, you know, Arlington can't be successful if Loudoun isn't successful, if Prince William isn't successful, and you can't be successful if we're a mess. So we all need to work together. Our people move all around, and it's been such a pleasure and delight. I'm going to enjoy seeing what you do next. I don't know what I'll do with those cards in my last, all day. But I wish you all the best, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what comes through this next process. It's really, it's an exciting time to be invested. So thanks for the opportunity.
So, with that, we have some 1, 2, 3, 4. There's no consent agenda, correct?
Correct.
Okay. We have a number of action items here. Some of these, I think, should go through pretty quickly. First, we have the project agreement for the Innovation Center Metro Station. Mrs. Boulevard.
Mr. Chairman, I am pleased to move approval of this item.
Second.
Ms. Hines, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Item 7, adoption of the vision and goals of transaction update. Ms. Backman, we need it for Ms. Malik. You got some for the show. There we go.
Good evening. Pleasure to be here. I don't have a presentation, but we could pull up that slide of Keith. So, as Keith described, one of the first steps in any good planning effort is to review your overall vision and big picture goals. The best practice, could we go to the slide that has... Okay. The best practice generally is to sort of follow a process where A leads to B, leads to C, leads to D, where A is your big picture vision that sort of describes the world that you want to live in from 100,000 feet up in the air, and then you move on to B, which are your big picture goals, and those are sorts of active things that you can work towards, and that's 10,000 feet up in the air, still pretty high. And then you move on to C, objectives, which are sort of specific, measurable methods to achieve your goals, and that's starting to get pretty close to the ground. And then you get into measures, and that's D, and that's data on each objective, right? So A to B to C to D is very, you know, straightforward. And the reason we do this is you've all sort of heard that transportation is a means to an end, not an end as in of itself. We've all heard that before. And so when we talk about this, the A and the B, the vision and the goals, those are the ends that we're working towards. They're a little bit fuzzy, sort of feel good things that we hope to do. Whereas the C and the D are the objectives and measures, and those are the means, and, you know, the more concrete, measurable things. So as the transaction subcommittee gets into 2016, next year, most of our work will concentrate on C and D, and we'll bring those back to you in the spring to talk about. But right now, we can't jump ahead to C and D without first talking about A and B. So we want to talk about the vision and the goals this evening. We are requesting an action of the board. We are requesting you officially approve the broad vision and goals that we will lay out for you next. They are in your package. If you have the memo in front of you, You can follow along if you like to look at things. The memo will show you the A vision, the B goals. It also has some illustrative objectives as C, sort of help you get an idea of where things will fit in. But I want you to please keep in mind we are focusing on A and B this evening. So let's dive in. First thing, A is that vision statement. It is on page 2 of the memo, under that nice big bold 4 vision. The subcommittee started with the vision statement from Transaction 2040, the previous plan, which I will just read very quickly. It read, in the 21st century, Northern Virginia will develop and sustain a multimodal transportation system that supports our economy and quality of life. It will be fiscally sustainable, promote areas of concentrated growth, manage both demand and capacity, and employ the best technology, joining rail, roadway, bus, air, water, pedestrian, and bicycle facilities into an interconnected network. So we thought that there was a lot to like with that statement, but also a few things that were a bit dated about it. A lot has changed in the 5 years since we worked on Transaction 2040. Number one, obviously, NVCA now has funding. So the need for this plan to go down to Richmond and say, hey, please give us funding is a little bit different than it was then. Second, of course, there's an increased focus on concrete transportation objectives, particularly congestion reduction. We have had bills come through the legislature. We have a mandate here, as it should be, to concentrate on that. So we wanted to modify the vision statement a little bit to reflect those realities. And so our proposal is in front of you. You can read it in the package. What's underlined is different, and it says very quickly, in the 21st century, Northern Virginia will develop and sustain a multimodal transportation system that enhances quality of life and supports economic growth. Investments in the system will provide strong transportation benefits, promote areas of concentrated growth, manage both demand and capacity, and employ the best technology, joining rail, roadway, bus, air, water, pedestrian, and bicycle facilities into an interconnected network. So basically, there are 3 changes there in front of you. The first change is we remove the word fiscally sustainable. Not to suggest that that's not important. It is obviously very important. We're committed to that. But we have funding now. We didn't then. The plan has a little bit of a different focus now than it did then. We thought that maybe it didn't need to be in the vision statement. Still important. Still something we hope to achieve. Maybe not in that overarching vision. The second thing is we switched the order of a couple of the items. We moved quality of life ahead of economic growth to reflect NVTA's charge to build a system that enhances quality of life. And finally, we added that statement, strong transportation benefits, to reflect that charge of congestion reduction and things like that. So we felt that that needed to be in the vision statement a little bit more explicitly than it was the last time. So that is the subcommittee's recommendation for the vision. We can talk about that now if you want, or I can go on to the goals and talk about those. And we can have a little discussion or vote after that. It's sort of up to you. Let's go ahead. All right? So the goals, again, this is the B, A to B to C to D. we have 3 broad goals that we're proposing. The first one reads, enhance quality of life and economic strength of Northern Virginia through transportation. So obviously that ties very directly with the vision statement. Basically what we mean with that is, simply, we want a transportation system that is usable and that works. In a lot of ways, so we have 3 goals, but in a lot of ways, this first one is the sort of bread and butter of the plan. This would have objectives such as congestion reduction, increased access, improved reliability, additional connections. This is where things like that would fit. We felt that it was important that that be sort of explicitly stated in the first goal. The second proposed goal is enable optimal use of the transportation network and leverage the existing network. So the focus of this goal would be simply being efficient. We don't want to build things just for the sake of building them. Of course, we do want to build things. That's important. That's encompassed in goal number 1. But we don't want to shut the door to optimizing existing infrastructure. That's important, too. So that's what this goal is all about. And objectives for that would... examples of objectives for that would be things like improve operations,
manage demand, right? So the third final goal reads reduce negative impacts of transportation on communities and the environment. So this reflects things that we know are important but maybe aren't specifically travel. You know, we could alleviate congestion a lot of different ways. We could bulldoze Tysons. We could ask the federal government to move to Wichita, and that would reduce congestion. But we probably don't want to do those things. And so we felt that it was important to have a goal where things that didn't relate to travel but were still important had a place. And so objectives there might include, you know, safety, protecting the environment, mitigating community impacts, things like that. So with that, that's really the A and the B, the vision and the goal. You will have a chance to talk about objectives and measures in the spring. But with that, I will take questions.
Any questions from the floor?
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have concern that we're removing fiscally sustainable. I understand the rationale that when this was done some years ago, the fiscal picture of transportation was not what it is today, but some of us would argue that even with what has happened, that we can't be static with that, and that we will not be able to sustain the system without continually looking at the finances of it and the amount of money needed to do what needs to be done. So I personally would like to see that back in there in some part. I think if we don't put it in there, then everybody will think, well, the war has been won, strike the flag, and desert the field.
From the subcommittee's perspective, there's no great reason not to include it. We wanted to give you the opportunity to discuss it, and we wanted to give you the opportunity to discuss how transaction is changing and evolving. We would recommend that if you do want to include that language again, it could be couched in the sentence that begins, investments in the system will provide strong transportation benefits, comma, be fiscally sustainable, comma, promote areas, etc. We have no great objection to that. Really up to the opponent.
Chairman, my thoughts were similar to Delegate Rush, and I think that should be in there. I don't think any of us works for a jurisdiction where we have revenue that is more than we'd like it to be. Let's just put it that way. So I would suggest that that be in there, and I'd move approval of the transaction vision and goals with that addition.
Second. Motion made by Gay, Mr. Russ, first and second. Motion by Mr. Parr, second by Mr. Russ. Any further discussion on this?
I guess my question is strong transportation benefits, if that implies only large projects, that would be a problem. If it means effective transportation benefits, that's something that I think you're getting at. We've really got to do the job, which we're all for that, whether it's small or large. So that would be my suggestion.
I don't know if there's need for a motion, but I would just say, provide effective transportation benefits. And at the end, after interconnected networks, to say that it's fiscally sustainable. Does that work?
After interconnected
networks, to say that it's fiscally sustainable.
As opposed to couching that in the previous point.
Oh, I don't care where.
I actually like where Senator Evans suggested to put the fiscally sustainable at the end, partly because it's closer to that interconnected network being fiscally sustainable, and I actually think that's our goal. It's not that our program is fiscally sustainable, it's that our network is fiscally sustainable. So I like that, Adam.
I would agree with that.
Okay. Make her a seconder agree with that change. Okay. Mm-hmm. Further discussion.
And are we doing this that we're changing strong to effective?
That was your final suggestion. That was the proposal. I'm hearing yes from Mr. Marshall on that as well. Okay. Any other wordsmithing? Any other questions? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? What'd you get? Next item, item 8, comes to meeting. President of the Working Group, you have before us a recommended list of projects for the FY17 program. This was vetted through the PIWG over the course of a week, supposed to be our last meeting, but a week and a half ago. They're actually, interestingly, we had capacity for 25 projects to be reviewed under 599. We actually only got 25 applications. It worked out nicely. One of those was withdrawn. We went to the quality control checks and determined that one project is not eligible to be in this list. So the sponsoring agency removed that. But what we have in front of us is essentially every other project that was submitted by the jurisdictions, but again, VDOT tells us that they do have capacity to review all of these.
Yes.
Ms. Papadina, do you need to add to that?
No, Mr. Chairman, just that we are trying to get some resolutions of individual projects that had the words missed some things regarding resolutions, and we expect to have those taken care of by the end of the year, or before the January.
Mr.
Chairman, since I represent the town leader, I'm going to ask this question. I see that the Eastwood Town Council will need to reword and reconsider its proposal. I'm just curious, did they miss some proper legal or professional way of doing it, or is substance or procedure here that is
it's really more procedure. Loudoun County, in addition to Leesburg, both submitted resolutions in support of the project, but the dollar amount was different in the resolution. So we went back to both localities to make sure that the dollar amounts were indeed equal, if you will, and consistent with what was in the project. So Loudoun County part is taken care of. Leesburg, they do have to go back to their council. So that's what we're waiting on.
So Leesburg will need to conform to the county's resolution?
No, I think it was just an error in how it was depicted. Not that there was a problem with what Leesburg did. It was actually a problem, an error, if you will, in how it was shown in their resolution. Their staff is okay with the change and just said they have to go forth to the council again for action.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, I think you'll notice that one of them will modify and hasn't gotten that resolution support yet, but we're going to move forward, assuming that we will get those in the coming weeks.
Yes, I believe we're supposed to get it on the 17th, December 17th, support.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, if we could have staff help us just a little bit with the numbers that are involved here. I know they're substantial, and I'm really talking about what the background is.
So the authority has roughly $230 million available in PAYGO funds for this one-year program. Of course, the total dollar amount is $667 million. So you can't fund every project that you're approving for evaluation unless you intend to look at bond financing or other financing opportunities. However, this is just to approve the project to go forth to be evaluated under AC-599 in addition to the authority's own project selection process. With your two-year program, I think out of the 37 projects, well, initially, I think there were 44 projects submitted for a total of $775 million.
That's the reason I asked that question, is because there's one project in here that's substantial in its dollars, and those dollars are greater than the one-year dollars that are up there.
Are you speaking for the $307 million?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I had a question on that in terms of when will the NBCA consider the bond issuance option for the $307 million project?
I think the authority will have to wait until you adopt the program, if you will. Right now, it's just for evaluation purposes. We anticipate going to public hearing on this draft program once we get to that point in May, with an adoption of the program scheduled for July. So at that time, I think you'll have a better idea, especially before you adopt, but at least going to public hearing, the project that you take to public hearing, and of course, when you adopt the program, you'll have an idea if the amount and dollar amounts of the projects are enough for PAYGO, or if you indeed need to consider a bond issue.
My last question is, will any of these projects which require the clarification hold up HB 599
No, we're being told that it won't hold up HB 599, but we have worked with VDOT and said those projects should be last. So if we do not get the qualifying materials, then those projects will come back to the authority next month and update the authority and say those projects have been removed. But we don't anticipate that being a problem.
Okay. Yeah. So just to foreshadow a little bit, by adopting this, the authority is stating that it is open to consideration for funding for all of these projects, including, say, item number 7, which is the $370 million project.
So item number 7 is a little different. For this action, you're just saying you want to evaluate
the project. You want it to be evaluated.
Right.
It has previously been evaluated, but it has to be reevaluated, right?
It's been evaluated under your transaction, but it hasn't undergone the evaluation needed for you to fund the project.
Okay, right.
Yes.
Right. But it was, it did get a 599.
No. This will put it into 599.
Now, why does it say, why indicates projects that have been partially or fully evaluated using 599 process?
Some of the projects.
I'm sorry. I'm looking at, my thing is folded and I was looking at the wrong one.
Yeah,
it's got an end. Okay, all right. That makes sense. So it was, it needs to go through the full process before we could say whether we would fund it or not.
Absolutely.
I think a fair way to, maybe a different way to answer the question might be fair, is that from a strictly legal perspective, this document does not, strictly speaking, address whether we're considering funding insofar as that we're not at that phase yet. However, given that we can only consider funding those projects that go through this, there is a strongly reasonable implication that this is tantamount to consideration of a project.
Yes.
I mean, that nothing that's on this, if it's not on this list, it will not be considered. Theoretically, something could be taken off of the list at the time that it's time to consider something, but we can't add anything to it.
Absolutely.
After
things will be taken off if we don't have enough money.
Well, no,
after
the, I mean, if things be taken off in adoption time, once we get to April, May, we will begin considering funding the public hearing process. And this will be, and it's possible that come April, we may say, there are some projects that scored so low, we're not even going to put them out to public hearing.
Which we did last time. That's my only point.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, if you're ready for a motion,
please.
I would move approval of the list of 24 candidate projects for the authority's fiscal year 2017 evaluation process to include submission for the House Bill 599. Rating and evaluation subject to the resolution of individual project application classification.
Second. Motion made by Ms. Bulova, second by Ms. Hines. Ms. Rabbit.
On a project, if it doesn't have estimated funds for 18, 19, 20, or 21, does that mean that after it's evaluated that can't change? That the, for example, project number 8 in Fairfax widening Richmond Highway? Has I don't know what I assume this is a million or
yeah.
Okay. So is there 5 million in 17 with the total project cost of 215 million but no funds for 18, 19 through 21? Does that mean that if we evaluated it that we can't spend more than 5 million or that's just
Well, two things, Senator Evan. Number one, the cost is important because we have to make sure that the project keeps the leg provides greatest level of congestion reduction relative to cost. Last month at your meeting, you did adopt the methodology to coincide with that. Now, if there was, the authority adopted the project at a higher cost than was submitted, we would need to make sure that we ran that higher cost through your process to make sure that the score is consistent with the funding amount.
Okay, I guess what I'm asking is, Fairfax has just asked for $5 million for that for 17 and not for future years yet. Does that mean that we can't fund future years later on? Or?
Oh, no. This is just a one-year program. One transaction is updated, which we anticipate is the fall of 2017 is adoption, we anticipate doing a full six-year program for fiscal years 18 through 2023. And at that time, we'll have another call for projects where the project can be
covered. Evaluation. Yes. Okay, thank you.
And I point out that was driving that, that $5 million for engineering right of way.
Right.
So it's specific to a particular phase. I don't know if this even, Mr. Shah, you know, does this $5 million fully fund engineering right of way?
But the money that was previously allocated, yes, we would fund that.
Right.
Since we've also applied for HB2 funding for it, we want to see how that process plays out. We didn't go beyond FY17, but likely we will have submission for HB2.
Okay. Is that helpful?
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. There's a motion on the table. All in favor?
Aye.
Are you opposed? Oh, excellent. Thank you very much. We go now to item 9, the adoption of the first drawdown commitment. Mr. York's not here, Mr. Long, that's fine.
I'm glad that put a motion on the table, and essentially this policy would provide a mechanism for the authority to be able to remove funding commitments for projects in the fiscal year 2017 program where projects were not did not seek reimbursement. And so this provides a mechanism for agencies to be able to submit drawdowns by the deadline. Agencies are allowed to ask for cancellations, but it, you know, it essentially helps to with the management of projects. It kind of can't go forward and what happens to the money. And so I would be glad to put a motion on the table to move that the authority approve of the draft 2017 program first drawdown commitment in a form approved by legal counsel.
Sure. I second that. And if I may just make a comment, Sharon and I were both at the Finance Committee meeting at which this was discussed, and I think we should move forward.
Any discussion? Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. We now have the. Item 10. resolution regarding the outside the Beltway project. Got my name on it. Let me start with you, Mon.
Sure, Mr. Chairman. So at your June authority meeting, Secretary Lane came and presented to the authority regarding the I-66 outside the Beltway project, seeking financial support via an eligible project for the project itself. The I-66 outside the Beltway committee met twice to consider Secretary Lane's request, and the following was discussed at these meetings. Number one, as you all know, the authority can only fund projects that are in your long-range transportation plan. A list of eligible projects in the I-66 outside the Beltway corridor was shared with the authority. There was discussion regarding one particular interchange, and now that our call for projects for FY17 has the project has been adopted for or approved for consideration, it was the I-66 at Route 28 interchange project at a cost of $370 million. Another of these 66 subcommittee meetings, we discussed the authority's capacity for bond issuance to cover the cost of a project totaling that amount or more. In working with the Council of Council, staff drafted a resolution regarding potential funding the project directly or indirectly related to the I-66 outside the Beltway project as part of the fiscal year 2017 program, which was attachment A, and you discussed at your last meeting. And I should say you had a robust discussion. During that discussion, you asked staff to do a little more homework on the resolution. Subsequently, we had a project implementation working group meeting where project implementation suggested that we add verbiage to the resolution stating that if the authority does consider this resolution and consider funding the project at that dollar amount, that it doesn't set a precedent for future funding requests from the Commonwealth. That resolution, and it's the red line version, is actually attachment D. So, and as part of the task and getting a little more information or doing a little more homework, I've asked Deputy Secretary Donahue to come and speak with you this evening to address any outstanding questions or comments or concerns that you may have.
Mr. Donahue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
my pleasure to be with you here this afternoon, or evening, excuse me. And I thank the Sackman for the invitation. Just to reiterate with some of Secretary Lane's comment and to really update you on where we are on the process, we have issued an RFQ to move forward to transform 66 outside the Beltway project under the Virginia Public-Private Transportation Act. As a part of that, we put up three different types of ways of moving forward with that project, including publicly financing it, as well as privately financing that through a full toll concession in a manner similar to 495 and the 95 Express Lane. For each of those procurement options, we did publish a draft term sheet, and at each of those, it did assume that there would be a maximum amount of up to $600 million in public funding that would be needed up front in combination with toll financing, again, whether public or private. The Secretary has indicated, and we talked at our most recent PCB meeting in Northern Virginia just this past Tuesday, that in the current House Bill 2 cycle, there is a total of $1.2 billion that's available. And if you remember, the legislature modified the formula distribution this past session. So $600 million of that is available statewide discretionary, and another $600 million is available and divided to each of the districts, and your district receives, I believe, about $120 million of that. And I have Mr. Kaskowitz and Mr. Dykes with the Commonwealth Transportation Board here, who are both at-large urban members who reside in Northern Virginia. And we did talk about this issue both at the meeting and other events, and it's been made clear by other members of the Commonwealth Transportation Board that they are not in a position where they believe all $600 million will be allocated by the Commonwealth Transportation Board, because it's statewide discretionary, to this project. And so Secretary Lane is requesting that the authority partner with the Commonwealth on this project. If you were to do so, we would, in effect, commit to split any public funding cost with you on a 50-50 basis, which is to say, if the project were to come in and only need $400 million, because of efficiencies or other things that were found out during the procurement process, then we would only request $200 million from the authority, and the Commonwealth would pay the other $200 million. Similarly, the Secretary would commit to the authority that the state or its private partner will maintain all downside risk with regard to any toll financing, but would provide to the authority any upside revenue sharing that is available. Again, our draft term sheet does request from all parties that are proposed that we receive $350 million over the 50-year term in today's net present value, which is at a 6% discount rate. So it's actually a little bit higher than the type of discount rate that was typically used in public discussion. The Commissioner of Highways has recommended that we move forward with a privately financed option based on the responses we received from the proposers. And in that, again, there would be up to $600 million public funding that's necessary. And if you all were willing to partner with us, we would ensure that $350 million in net present value excess revenues would be returned to the authority for projects of your selection. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Let me ask one thing, just a clarification, Ms. Backman. I'll come to you and you can go to anybody else on this. The Secretary just talked about this in the context of a partnership, which I don't think we want to pretend that it's not, except insofar as it's a partnership, it's not a partnership. Because we are not, this resolution doesn't use that term, it's very specific, because we are not, at this point, based on where we are in transaction, among other things, not in a position to put funding toward the 66 toll lane project. So anything we do has to be framed and identified as a standalone project that isn't captured in 2030, goes through all of the various things. Help me make sure we're clear on that.
Absolutely. It has to be in your long-range transportation plan that you adopted a few years ago that underwent the validation process. And again, you're right, it's a standalone project.
The resolution doesn't specifically say what project, does it? Or am I missing something?
No, the resolution does not specifically state what project. I think when we brought it to you last at the November meeting, it was prior to the close of the call for projects for the FY17 program, so we didn't want to predetermine which project would be submitted.
Okay.
This is a follow-on question. Are there any expectations that
this similar approach could be applied to the I-395 project.
Well, Sam, this is why the discussion at Project Implementation Working Group was so important. It was noted that if the authority does consider or is willing to consider funding a project indirectly or directly related to the corridor, it does not set a precedent. So there could be future requests, and you can say no resolution or yes, a resolution. It's really not precedent set. Attachment
B. Mr. Chairman, if I could just add for the benefit of the group, the Commonwealth is committed to working with its private sector partners to deliver I-395 at no cost to the region or any of the local governments in this area. If there are any public costs to be borne by that, and at this point we believe there are not going to be any, but should that change, the Commonwealth will bear that responsibility fully.
Deputy Secretary, let me make sure I understand what you have said. It's about $600 million, 6-year plan that is discretionary. Talking to the members of the CCG, not Northern Virginia, it's been made pretty clear that not all that money will come to Northern Virginia, but for that matter, it will go to any particular area.
Mr. Chairman, Delegate Russ, that is, I think, been a very distinct part of the discussion. And again, if you'd like to ask either the CCB members who've been a part of those dialogues, I think they'd be happy to reinforce that there are several members of the board who've been very vocal about how they believe the money should be distributed and not to the single region.
Now let me go forth with what Ron stands. If NBTA agrees to this resolution, which in essence says we will partner with you for some amount of money, might be $600 million, might be $400 million. But the Commonwealth will pay half of that. Did I hear that correctly or not?
But Mr. Chairman Delegate, should you choose to fund a project that's a component of a larger 66 project, we would make sure that whatever the aggregate amount of public funding necessary to deliver the broader project, that you all, we would not in effect pay only $100 million and ask the authority to fully fund the interchange. If the overall public funding necessary to deliver both the interchange and the rest that 66 project were $400 million, we would pay $200 million and only ask the authority for $200 million for the interchange.
And then the final point of clarification is this will be a toll facility. There will be revenues flowing to the Commonwealth. After you do your maintenance and pay down the bonds and all that, there will be some money left over. And will some of that come back to NBTA?
Mr. Chairman, Delegate Russ, if that's the Secretary has proposed it, we would ensure that at least $350 million in net present value, if we move forward in the toll concession, comes back to the authority, again, for projects that you would select.
So it would be money. It wouldn't be a big check to us. It would be this commission would pick projects that in essence, the Commonwealth would fund.
Mr. Chairman Delegate, we can figure out the specifics and mechanics. I think that would all end up as part of the final negotiations with the private sector teams we're currently in discussion with.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So as we all just witnessed, we just submitted the interchange for consideration as part of our discussion. So is the Secretary requesting this resolution, and if so, why? What exactly does it accomplish?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor Letourneau, as moving forward, a lot of these large projects involve toll financing. You know, most toll finance projects in the United States go for the TIFIA loan program, which is at the Department of Transportation. And when you meet with the TIFIA loan folks, one of the things you have to show them is a plan of finance, that you can demonstrate there are mechanisms by which you could move forward to fully fund this project. And we believe this resolution, again, it would not be a commitment of the authority, just as the Commonwealth cannot commit to funding the broader Trans 166 project until the House Bill 2 process works itself through. But to be able to go to the TIFIA office to demonstrate that would be very helpful in showing that there
but
is a
you simply demonstrate the fact that NBTA has already asked that the project be scored as and for inclusion and a potential award?
Mr. Chairman,
isn't that the real action?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Supervisor Turner, respectfully, your current program is going to be a one-year program, of which the amount available is less than the amount that would be necessary to move forward with the interchange in a broader Trans 166 project. So it would leave a hole, I believe, of approximately $70 million in that plan of finance, which would be a problem for the TIFIA office.
Okay.
if I may. The value is not in, the primary value from a TIFIA perspective is not in stating that we're considering the project. It's that we're considering using bond funding to finance the project, which therefore would demonstrate how we would generate these hundreds of millions beyond what is in the one-year plan.
Mr. Chairman, it's that you have an ability to fund the interchange because a one-year program is insufficient to cover the cost of the interchange. Similarly, when we go and talk to the Commonwealth Transportation Board members about the Trans 166 project and the interchange again as a component of that, they are going to ask, is the region engaged in this, and are there any other funds coming from that? And I think the impression the Secretary has received from the board, and again, I have two board members here, if you'd like to talk to them directly, is that other members have expressed that they would like to see skin in the game from Northern Virginia's project, as they've seen similarly from the Hampton Roads.
Just add to Nick's comment, it would be a very hard case for us to make, Chairman, without that support.
But how can, and this isn't related to the question for you, but how can the authority make that kind of commitment for a future program? I mean, essentially what we're doing is saying that, yes, we're committed to funding through bonds a project which, as you just pointed out, is not even going to be in this program for future members. What weight does that have? I mean,
I'll give you the state perspective, Mr. Chairman. I can't answer for the authority's actions because I'm not a voting member or ex officio. But from the state's perspective, you currently have a one-year programming cycle before you because of the transaction discussion that Mr. Mallow had with you earlier. And then I believe at that point you may consider longer programs at a time, which again is a discussion for a later day. I think the value to the Commonwealth is understanding that should you choose to fund that interchange, and should the Commonwealth choose to fund the broader 66 project, there's a financial plan that is viable and implementable for this. And I think also at this time we have received competitive bids from the private sector who similarly are going to want to understand if they are putting in private equity into this project, how is the Commonwealth and in turn its political subdivisions working together to be able to bring this project to fruition. I don't think that expressing a willingness or interest to go to the bond market, that would in fact would be kind of a, you're saying that's something you're willing to do as a part of this upcoming program. And that is the way in which the full interchange project would be fundable.
I think the resolution is a little bit more specific than that, though. We're down to the dollar amount.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm going to ask a question about the executive secretary's answer. Has the project, as it may be proposed, been scored under 599? And if so, what was the project that was scored, and what kind of number did that yield?
Mr. Chairman, Doug, are you referring to the full Transform 66 project?
I'm referring to really the 66 project that we're being asked to commit a willingness of spending up to $400
million. Mr. Chairman, Doug, I believe you've just taken action to request that it be scored. That specific interchange has not yet been scored.
And how about, Mr. Chairman, how about the portion of this project that is not part of the interchange?
The entire Transform 66 outside of Beltway project has been scored. It was evaluated with the top scoring project from the first round of the NDCA's 599 analysis. If you recall, in the first round, I believe the widening of the Fairfax County Parkway for approximately 23 miles was the top scoring project, and at that time received an 88. Again, remember the 599 scoring is all relative.
Right.
So the top scoring project determines every other project score below that. When we scored the top scoring projects from the first year first program with Transform 66 outside of Beltway, Transform 66 outside of Beltway was the top scoring project with a score of 80.4, and the Fairfax County Parkway was the next highest scoring project, and it had 60 and some decimal, I don't recall.
So I want to make sure I'm clear on this, because there's sort of a couple moving pieces to that. The Transform 66 outside the Beltway project was not scored under 599 as part of our FY15-16 program. VDOT separately, and is absolutely allowed to do so, it doesn't require NBTA action for VDOT to score something. VDOT scored it, so even though it's been scored by 599, we still can't fund the overall project because it's not in transaction.
But the scoring is nonetheless valuable from your perspective in that it shows that, yes, indeed, it is a significantly congestion-related project and gives us some indication. This project, and there's an important point, is we talk about willingness to provide funding. This resolution, and I'll look at Ms. Backman, does not say that we're willing to provide funding. It says we're willing to consider providing funding,
absolutely,
which was something that we talked about at the very first meeting on this as being extremely important, because we can't say that we're willing to provide funding, because to Mr. Minshew's question, this project hasn't been scored, so we can't fund it. We're willing to consider it. The means by which we consider it is by running it through the 599 program, which we just said we're going to do. But that, so this piece, and this piece will be scored for its congestion relief in 56, but also for its congestion relief on Route 28. Because it's actually in transaction in the context of being part of Route 28. That would be part of Route 56. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman, and if I could add, it has to undergo 599 and be scored against your other evaluation criteria also.
I would take a small pause. If anyone from NBRC or NPTA staff,
so they were working on
it. They're working on it. It's obviously very intense issue. I'm doing it so intentionally.
I wasn't sure if it was just a discussion or if it was getting warm.
I've been watching it steadily pick up. We started at 74, now we're at 79.
There's something going on. I don't think we can. I don't think the zoning allows it anymore. Anyway, I'm sorry. I think we addressed it. More questions.
Yeah, you had mentioned that it would require up to $600 million in public funding in total. How much private funding would be involved in this project?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Evan, there would be a mix of private funding and toll financing that would likely be in between $1.5 billion and $1.7 billion.
Thank you, Deputy Secretary. Let me go back just a little bit. In your very first thought, you talked about three potential methods of trying to get this problem. Help me with that.
Mr. Chairman and Mayor Parrish, there were three different ways under procurement options that were offered to the private sector, and we opened that process in October and closed it on December 1st. And have evaluated those, and the commissioner had recommended one of those three, which was a full toll concession where the private sector would fund it through a mix of bonds and private equity and take risk for the toll revenue. The other two, one would have been a project where the private sector designed and built the project and then also agreed to maintain it for approximately 15 years, and the Commonwealth would then publicly finance that through a bond issuance, which would require authorization from the General Assembly. And then the final option was one where the private sector would design it and build it, and they would have the opportunity during the procurement to compete with each other by coming up with innovative designs, and those who came up with the most innovative designs could win the contract. So that means, and again, the public sector would then operate and maintain it for the life, and then finance it again through debt authorization, which requires General Assembly approval. We have recommended, and the Secretary has concurred, moving forward with a full toll concession.
So full toll concession, we would add tolls to 66 in order to be able to finance it, to pay the contractor, whatever you want to call them, that builds the road. But the plan is that we would have $600,000 worth of public funding within it.
Mr. Chairman, Mayor Pace, all options included tolls for express lanes on I-66, three general purpose lanes, two express lanes, reconstruction of interchanges, increased commuter bus service, new park and ride lots, and several other improvements of that nature. And they all assume that up to $600 million could be available in public funding, and the rest would need to be covered through toll financing and private equity or some mix thereof. We did work with several different financial firms to analyze the degree in which tolls could support this project, and we had multiple firms who came to the conclusion that up to $600 million public funding would be needed.
Well, make sure we're all saying the same thing. I mean, at least in the P3 in Virginia, there has always been a public funding source of some percentage. I mean, this is not unusual, right?
Mr. Chairman, I would say nationally and internationally, there's always been some amount of public funding that is necessary in these projects. Again, you are building a public asset, that will be in place after the term of these deals expire. And it does provide public benefit. And so the I-4 95 expressway required about $525 million in upfront public funding. The 95 expressway, because it was reconstruction of an existing asset, required slightly less. It required, I believe, $90 million in upfront public funding. And in that one, the public sector actually ended up funding all the transit components that otherwise would have been a part of that project to get to the lower funding cost. On the 66 project, the commuter buses and the park and ride lots are included within the water project framework.
Let me come back to my original comment and make sure I understood what I think you said. Setting aside the fact that we can't do anything until it's been scored and all that, but I think, correct me if I'm wrong, that if MDTA puts money in this project in the future, up to $600 million might be less, Commonwealth would match that. In other words, it would be a half and half partnership.
Mr. Chairman Delia Russ, it would be a half and half up front, and then the Commonwealth would provide $350 million net present value back to the authority over the term of the deal, which would be a 50-year term.
And that was my second point. So, it seems to me, if I understand the numbers, there's a maximum of $600 million, and we put half of that in it, $300 million. There's a possibility that over 50 years, we can get all that money back in the form of additional projects in Northern Virginia that this commission would select.
Mr. Chairman, Delia Russ, the three private sector firms that have offered to privately finance this have all indicated that they can provide that within the term in their existing financial models with the traffic and revenues that reports they have seen.
I have a question for Ms. Batman. This revised resolution, it says that our willingness to consider providing such funding shall not be regarded as a precedent for future requests. Whose wording is that? Is it our wording?
That's the wording that staff worked on in consultation with the Council of Councils just to address some of the concerns that was brought up at the project implementation work of the committee.
I see. Then a follow-up question from Mr. Donahue. We'd be paying more than it says here that we provide up to $403 million, which is more than a third of the fund. When would we start receiving that revenue?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Evans, that would be something that we would figure out in the coming months as we have these discussions with the private sector. I do want to say it's not going to be that in the first 5 years you get $350 million back. Sure. But over the term, that amount would come, and that's something that we have to figure out. There may be some teams that want to provide amount up front and then have, you know, incremental amounts every decade. That is something that we're going to have to discuss with this private sector firm.
So let's say we issue the bond for, say, $350 million. What are the proceeds that will pay off the bond holders? Full revenue, or is it our tax money that will pay off a bondholder?
It was in the regional revenue fund, the tax money.
So we have to understand that this is a very large project that will absorb a lot of our ability to do projects generally. I'm just trying to figure this out. And who will actually own this energy? Will it be owned by us, or will it be owned by a private contractor? Or we're putting this money in, so what is it that we get in return?
Mr. Chairman, you would get an improved interchange, which would be owned by the Commonwealth of Virginia, and you would get $350 million in today's dollars over the next 50 years.
Right, but if you took $400 million over 50 years, it would be a whole lot more than $350 million.
Mr. Chairman,
I'm not being negative. I'm just trying to figure
out. Our current draft term sheet does not indicate that amount would be necessary. It's up to $600 million. So it would be $300 million and $300 million. Again, your resolution may consider other projects. I can't speak to the dollar amounts in that resolution. All I can speak to is the Transform 66 out to the Beltway project and that interchange.
The narrow point that I was making on that is that we're putting in $400 million today, and over 50 years we'll get what number to get the $350 million, what are you assuming we put in up front?
50% of up to $600 million, which could be $200 million, it could be $100 million, it could be $300 million.
So let's assume we go up to the top, we put in $300 million today, and over 50 years we get $350 million back. People need to understand that's not a great return. But you may go ahead and do that anyway. But I just want to know, if we vote for this tonight, do we still have the ability to look at the financial arrangements to make a decision that, yes, this is a good investment of the tax money, considering all the other projects we have to do? Or if we vote for this tonight, if it scores well, we're automatically committed to doing it. I'm trying to figure out what it is we're voting on.
So let me take a stab at it. You touched on something that I wanted to come to. There's a piece that's a little confusing, and Nick Newman addressed it. This resolution calls for funding up to $403 million. So if you look, I'm going to ask the question. So there's two pieces I'm going to address here. We approved item 8 earlier, which identifies this as a $370 million project. So the first question is, where's the number 403 come from? Second question, we'll get there. I know you got an answer, but second question is, so we would be asked to put into the overall 66 thing, although we would frame it a different way, no more than half of up to $600 million. It could be less than 600, but for discussion's sake, Mr. Snyder said, let's call it 600 million. Half of 600 million is less than 403, and it's less than 370. The first question is, where does 403 come from? And assuming that number's right, and assuming that $300 million is also right, what happens to the other $103 million? How do we balance that back out versus the state? So,
Mr. Chairman, the $403 number came from, we wanted to let you know if you bond funded the project at $370 million, you're at $403 when you factor into the debt service reserve and the cost of issuance.
The $403 million is the total cumulative cost of the financing, both principal, interest, and other associated costs.
So that's
fine.
The $403 million is the $370 million project fund, which was the target amount for the project. Regardless of the share that
we think it is right now.
The debt service reserve fund, which would be bond funded in order to reduce the impact on the PAYGO fund in the year of financing in future years, is $30 million. That is calculated as approximately 1 year's worth of debt service. That $30 million would be used in the final year of repaying the bond to make that bond payment.
This goes back to the very complex but very interesting information that Ms. Carter gave us back in
August.
She said August. That was laid out for us back in August. That using that mechanism where that money is funded up front and then gets paid back at the back end is part of how we keep our AA+ bond rate.
Yes, sir.
So then the question is, so $403 million is more than half of up to $600,000. So how do we fix that problem? Well, I don't think the contractor who builds this interchange is going to say, oh, you're only on the hook for up to half of $600 million. I guess I'll lower my price. So does that mean that the state then puts money toward this to reduce our cost relative to the state's cost? Does money come to the authority? Because I think that question is separate from the $350 million present net value of future bond revenue. Is that correct?
Yes. Chairman Noe, if the project fund were to be $300 million, the amount that we would need to issue in order to have that debt service reserve fund would be $227 million. So it's...
What I'm trying to do is, I don't think you're the person who's question. What I'm trying to do is, Mr. Donahue said that whatever we put into this, the state's going to put in the exact same amount. So we're talking about putting in $403 million. The state keeps that promise, has got to put in $403 million. And now we're at $806 million, and that's more than the vision for this project is. So it seems to me that somehow or another the state has to buy down at CPD expense.
Some of the $300 million the state is willing to put toward this has to be used to buy down our $403 million down to $300 million, and then they've got to find another $197 million to spend someplace else to keep us at 50-50. You have a question, Mr. Donahue?
I do, and Mr. Chairman, what I would say is, again, if you chose to fund the interchange, let's assume the estimate of 370 is 100% accurate, we would put out to bid the interchange as a part of this broader project. And if the broader project costs 600, we would not ask you for a penny over 300 million. It wouldn't matter that you had expressed a willingness or interest to go to that amount. We would not ask you for it.
But the answer is, we don't know how that will be worked out, but it's something we'll have to work out between now and June when a final decision is made.
That's
a good answer.
And Mr. Chairman, if I could also note, 300 million figure is a 6% discount rate. If you talk to your financial folks at the county offices, that is a much higher discount rate than what is used traditionally at, you know, public authorities for considering revenues. So, for example, if that were at a 3% discount rate over this term, that would be a dramatically larger number by several factors. So I just want to highlight that for folks. We use that rate for the purposes of our discussions with those private sector teams, but that is a much higher rate than what's traditionally used for public sector finance assumptions.
Thank you for your patience.
You were going somewhat to the same place I was. I think it's instructive that we just learned that this extra $30 million or so that we're talking about here is really what debt service is for a year. Because this is the way we talked about it at the outside the Beltway conversation was when we make a decision to do a $300 million bond, what we're taking from our annual revenues is that $27 or $30 million a year. So we've got $300 million, for lack of a better, you know, for just a rough number, and we're going to take 10% of that, and we're going to commit it over some period of years in order to pay for this project. So we're not coming up with $300 today. We're coming up with it over time, just like when we pay our mortgages or we bond our debt service at home in our community. At the same time, we're hearing Mr. Donahue say they believe from the concession point of view, they will be able to return to us $350 million over this time period. Now, it's not the same time period, right? The bond period is less than the other. But one of my concerns all the way along has been if we're going to participate in this project and we're going to basically, in some sense, agree to upfront or provide a funding stream to make this happen on a project that you all put in the last transaction and everybody agrees is a huge bottleneck. So to me, that's a very strong argument that Martin made. But and what I'm doing is saying I'm taking 10% to unlock this over some period of years. And now the Commonwealth is saying back, and we're gonna pay you back. It won't come out exactly in the same amount of time, but you will have revenue from this. And I feel like we're kind of making out okay. It's balancing itself out. So the trick of all of this, and this is the conversation we have had over the last however many months, is as we have crafted this memorandum of understanding on inside the Beltway. The trick of all of this is what's in those documents, and do we all feel that those documents fairly capture the conversation we have had here? And as somebody who's been intimately involved in looking at the inside the Beltway documents and talking with the Council of Councils and with Kelly and all those people, I can tell you, right, these folks, they drive a hard bargain, but when they say they're going to do it, it has shown up in the documents. And if it is really important to us, and we all say that collectively, they will find a way to work with us to get to that document. And then that document has standing. It has legal standing. And so for me, I don't feel like this is that big of a lift anymore. The answers we asked about toll revenue, the top of the the top amount of the project, all of that, fundamentally, it is a partnership. But I think it's a partnership based in our rules, which say we have to fund things that are in our programs that we think will reduce congestion. And I don't think it can be a question that this 5628 interchange is an enormous problem for all of you. Because, like, I never drive off there. but I feel like, you know, this is not a mistake. This is the right thing to do.
let me add a couple of observations on this because it's important. Because we are sort of discussing two different projects at the same time. There is the 66 Transform 66 outside the Beltway project. And let me acknowledge there are people in this region, maybe people in this room, who just ideologically oppose the project. Full stop. Not whether it's a PPPA versus blah blah blah. I don't think we should toll 66 outside the Beltway. Done. And we heard from some of those, CTV heard from some of those folks in Tuesday night. I sat through quite a lot of it. It was on the front row, so it's a little tons of heat coming off of it. But I have a cigarette in the middle. But the point is so if one's goal is to say, don't do 66 outside the Beltway, full stop. One way to make it harder to do, maybe not stop it, but one way to make that project a lot harder to do is to say, we're not willing to consider this. However, another way to make that project harder to do is to say, well, we're willing to have a conversation, see what kind of agreement we can negotiate over the next several months, and then in June say, the agreement that we negotiated isn't very good, let's not approve this project. Separately, there's this other piece of this that hits home for me a lot, because a lot of my constituents, even though I represent Prince William County, a lot of my constituents spend an hour and 20 minutes a day trying to get from my district to this interchange, like 7 miles up the road. What would be another really weird thing is if we decide that we don't want to be part of the 66 project tonight, but then come June, we say, gosh, this project has an unbelievably high HD599 score, and we've determined that it's extremely cost-effective relative, or it leaves a great deal of congestion relative to cost, and we just think it's a good project to build, and we approve it. But then we are left with, well, how does this tie into the fact that we still have congestion on 66? And what I'm concerned about is that we can find ourselves in a situation where we're trying to fix a problem on Route 28 that can also fix a problem on Route 66 at the same time, and we end up fixing neither because we are caught up on the whether this is willing to fund or willing to consider funding. And that's where I go back to the reason I'm comfortable. I mean, I don't know I like the deal, but I know that I'm willing to stand by willingness to consider providing funding because I can consider it and then still say no later. So that's the piece that I think is spicy. I rambled on. Let's get a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to put a motion on the table for us to then discuss or continue discussion. I move adoption of NDTA Resolution 16-04, potential funding of projects directly or indirectly related to the Commonwealth I-66 Outside the Beltway project for the fiscal year 2017 program, and if I have
as revised. Motion made by Mrs. Goldberg, seconded by Mr. Ross.
And Mr. Chairman, I would just like to point out, I think actually you very succinctly described the action that we had before. Essentially, we're agreeing to consider, and the now therefore be it resolved is very carefully and artfully worded. That the authority expresses its interest in and willingness to consider providing funding, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so this essentially says we are interested in continuing to work with the Commonwealth on a funding plan that will continue to be developed. And there were a lot of assurances that I heard this evening that raised my comfort level. And I think all of us are probably thinking, well, we need to, you know, see this in writing, some of these commitments, and we will, I expect. But first, we need to, I think, take this first step. Let me just say that in Fairfax County, having worked on the I-66 Outside the Beltway project, I want to compliment the Commonwealth. They have been fantastic about meeting with the community and ironing out all of the things that caused the community to be extremely concerned and wanting to come out of the box opposing the project in the beginning. But many, if not most, of those issues have been worked out. Not that it's finished, because we still are putting this out to bid. And the private sector will have the opportunity to refine and make some additional changes, bring down the cost of the project, but also minimize the effect of the project on adjacent properties. So I found that the Commonwealth to be a really good partner, better than I've experienced ever before in working with the community to make changes to the project, and I expect that same kind of cooperation and helpfulness in working in good faith to complete the financial aspect of the project. So anyway, I feel better about this arrangement than I have previously, and I hope that my fellow commissioners will support the motion.
We are running behind, but this is a really key issue for testing the session of the commission.
A few observations. First, this is an interesting motion because we're not approving a standard project agreement for a project. We're not approving a $400 million project. We are expressing a willingness to consider, which is kind of loosey-goosey as you can get on a legal document.
Sit down, lawyer.
But for purposes of voting aye or nay, I'm going to have to say, is this a good idea or a bad idea? Which means I'm going to test this. Is it a good idea to put up $403 million, even though it's got the precatory language? That's how I'm going to end that. And I first would agree with something that Mr. Snyder said, that for every other voting on a project, we've been able to kind of implicitly consider the opportunity cost. If we approve X, what do we lose on Z and Y? For this one, we really can't. We don't know what the opportunity cost is by making this large, shall we say, potential contribution. A second one, getting more into the philosophy of House Bill 2313, Mr. Chairman, the theory, at least for this delegate, and you've got three people up there in the general assembly voted yes for that bill, but I was thinking that the concept was our region gets a baseline of Commonwealth funding for road improvements, and everything we do supplements that. Now, what this is doing, it's kind of created a hybrid. That's something that is unanticipated. And rather than saying we get our fair share of that $600 million, we get that, we build roads, and everything we do is on top of that. So the concern I have, we're kind of creating this unusual hybrid that I don't think was contemplated by the legislature. That's just my view, and the legislature voted for it.
Just briefly, I had an observation and two things that might be a little weak, so I'll be brief. One is, we're saying this should not be regarded as a precedent for future requests. I'm glad we're saying it, but I think it's a precedent for future requests regardless if we do this. And the two pieces I just want to mention about the tolling is if we were to go ahead and do this, I sure hope we get revenue tolling for as long as there's tolling, not for 50 years or something. And if we do get that tolling, that the money should come back and be for the whole region, not just for that corridor. So that's
what I also feel a lot better. I very much appreciate the clause that was placed in, President Clause. I appreciate the commitments that were made this evening. The I-66 is extremely important. The 2866 interchange is extremely important. In light of state funding issues, the lack of funding. I take very seriously our responsibility here is to do everything we can to reduce congestion, and that's a very serious responsibility. So I, for one, will put aside my concerns that I've had. I'll put aside the fact that it's a high-dollar project, the timing of it. I also will put aside the fact that I still have concerns about how this is going to affect the NDK's ability to choose projects with regional balance when project selection time comes. But in the end, job one for us is to do everything we can to reduce congestion. So I feel a lot better about this.
All right, a couple thoughts from Loudon. I think, first of all, if you have to put language into a resolution saying it doesn't set a precedent, then it does set a precedent. That's why you're putting the language in. You're concerned about that. I don't think putting that clause in really does a heck of a lot. I guess
my concern is how broad this resolution really is. It doesn't say we're willing to consider the 2866 interchange project. It says 66 outside the Beltway directly. Now, because of Transaction 2040, the only real way to do that is through that project. But we don't know how that project scores. We're going out of order. And I think by doing this, we're giving it a little bit greater deference, and we're giving it a little bit of a nudge over all those other projects. I also think that the intent of us doing this is to indicate something beyond what the authority is actually doing. Otherwise, it's not valuable in any way. It really isn't, because we've already proven we're willing to consider the interchange. We just did that. We just put that into consideration. So the only way that this is really valuable is to indicate to others that the authority is in fact going to do this. And I don't think we're there yet. I don't think we know if we're willing to do this or not. The other bucket of concern that we have is on the overall cost, which is up to $403 million. I do not think just philosophically that on a project which is a federal interstate and a state project that the locality should have to fund up to two-thirds of the public money being put into the project. I am all in if we're talking about skin in the game, but that is more than just skin in the game. That's a majority of the funding of the public money being put into this project. I think that's too much. So I don't like the message that sends as well. The fact that this is $403 million. So we do have concerns. It is not because we don't support the project as a whole or the concept or the interchange. It's that we don't think this resolution is necessary given the actions that NBTA has already taken to demonstrate that this project is, in fact, something we are willing to consider through the 2866 interchange.
Just to clarify, we're not voting to approve the funds tonight. We still have the option to refuse to do this or to negotiate terms that may be very different from what we've heard tonight. Is that right? And we're able to consider this in the context of other projects when it comes time to a vote. Is that right? So I guess weighing and balancing, I'm willing to go forward with this, but I think the issues that have been raised are very fundamental issues, and I'm assuming that we're not precluding a full decision and debate on those issues in the future.
Thank you. First of all, Deputy Secretary, it's good to have you here tonight. Thank you for coming. Members of the CTB, same to you. Thank you for coming and your hard work as well. I know you have difficult decisions to make, as we all do for our community. The challenge that I have with this is severalfold. I have a concern about the fact that we've got a precedent-setting statement in there, because, frankly, I think it sets the precedent by taking this action. The other thing that I'm concerned about is this is a relatively new organization that has funding for only a period of a short period of time. And we're working very hard. The staff is working very hard. I think the authority is working very hard to make sure that we follow what the legislature set out for us to do. And I'll indicate that, for example, the amounts deposited into the fund and the distribution of expenditure of such amounts shall not be used to calculate or reduce the share of local, federal, or state revenues otherwise available to participating jurisdictions. The concern I have about that is we have very little knowledge about where the money is coming from to accomplish this. It's an interstate roadway. The feds ought to be funding this in some large way, it seems to me. And I haven't heard anything about that tonight. We have little in documentation here tonight to make a decision. And when we make decisions from the NBTA's perspective, having heard from our staff, we have a lot of information. And this information here tonight is not as much as I'd like to have seen. I appreciate Ms. Bulova's conversation about what Fairfax has heard from Virginia, but my jurisdiction, for example, has not heard much. And I would invite the state to come to Prince William Manassas Park to talk about about this in more detail. So I have concerns about what we're being asked to do tonight. Frankly, in the end, I don't know that it accomplishes anything. We still have the ability, the right, to make a decision based upon the information that we will get in the months to come. So why we're being asked to accomplish this tonight seems a little bit out of order to me. Just a little out of order based upon what we were, what we've got to do within the legislation that created the MBTA and has still 2013.
Any other comments? Just one more observation. A lot's been said about the question of precedent. I think as elected officials, we talk about in this body and every other body and part, we talk about the concept of precedent a lot. I might suggest that whether this accepts a precedent or not may not be relevant. In our FY14 plan, the state came to us looking for money that CTV wanted to prioritize on the Fairfax County Parkway and on I-95. I don't think we had approved either of those products. To the extent that we're talking about the precedent of the state asking us to fund a project that they are considering, the precedent already exists because we did it in FY14. So if precedent is a question, precedent actually was already established, one might argue. And regardless of whether this sets a precedent or not, there's nothing that ever prevents the state or anybody from coming back to us in any future round. And I say that more as a lawyer than not that I have been doing now. So that if this question comes up in the future, it's some bond validation hearing, I'm on the record saying it. That said, we may have reached the point, as Secretary Hazel likes to say, where everything has been said, but not quite everyone has said it. So I think there are lighties in the background. You still glad you retired?
I am very glad I'm retired.
Is there anything else that has not been shared that needs to be shared on this?
Again, just to end this on a positive note, since this is my upbeat note, since this is my last meeting. Last meeting we had this conversation and I sort of somewhat characterized, and again I appreciate all the extra effort and work that's gone by the legal staff to craft the resolution, and I certainly support it. But last meeting I sort of characterized this as I smell a skunk. Tonight I don't smell a skunk, but I see a skunk.
I've never heard it.
I think it's clear that we don't have unanimity on this. We do have very complex voting rules. So I'm going to ask for a roll call vote on this. And I think lots of people will be keeping score. I know what it needs to be. I've already done the math. I've got to know what the numbers are. I've got the algorithm. I don't have what X and Y equal. That said, would you please call the vote?
Chairman Nunn.
Yes.
Vice Chairman Yule.
Yes.
Chair Hines. Yes. Supervisor Letourneau.
No.
Chairman Bulova.
Yes.
Mayor Perry.
No.
Mayor Silverthorne. Councilmember Rochelle.
Yes.
Councilmember Snyder.
Yes.
Senator Evans.
Yes.
Delegate Russ?
Yes.
Delegate Minshew?
No.
Lawyers can tell me I'm wrong. The motion carries by exactly the margin it has to carry by. With eight jurisdictions, the vote has to, for the public edification, when we vote on any item here, a lot of our votes are unanimous, so it's usually easy to count. The affirmative votes must equal 2/3 or greater of the voting members in the room. There are 11 voting members, 2/3 is 7 1/3, 8 votes carried. We must have 2/3 of those jurisdictions represented in the room. With 8 jurisdictions represented, 5 2/3 equals 2/3, 6 is what you need. And it must require that 2/3 of the population of the region be represented. And the short version is that Prince William and Fairfax plus...
We're glad you're chairman.
Prince William and Fairfax plus any third jurisdiction equals 2/3 of the population, so it carries.
We all knew that. We all...
I said we didn't know. Don't make me explain how a quorum works. It's really much more complicated. With that, the motion carries unless the council looks at me differently.
Okay.
Council is nodding that I'm correct. Thank you. Motion carries. Thank you very much. We are way over time, and Mrs. Gross is never going to forgive me, but we have one more important item. Mr. Parrish, can you give the Personnel Committee report?
Yes, I'd be pleased to. Not long ago, this authority took up a short-term evaluation of our executive officer, Monica Backman. And recently, though we were late, because we were to take up that evaluation again in May, recently the Personnel Committee took up the evaluation of Ms. Backman and the discussion about what should happen to her future and with regard to pay, longevity, and other things. Let me say that the committee, made up of Barry Hines, Sharon Bulova, Scott York, myself, and Mr. Joey, chairman, took their time, and I apologize to Monica Backman for that, but we had an election intervening. But we took a great deal of time in discussion. We discussed a lot of information that we'll be glad to share with you individually if you'd like. But we are going to make the following recommendations, and I can share with you again the information for that. Let's see, Institute.
I think you should state the recommendation to the group and we'll consider that a motion.
Okay, the recommendation is to move forward with accepting the evaluation of Monica Backman and moving forward with her continued employment with the authority at the pay level recommended by the Personnel Committee.
And I'm happy to second that motion.
Any questions or discussions? All in favor, please say
aye.
Ms. Backman, let me just end that I agree with everything Mr. Parrish said, that he's done an extraordinary job for the rest of the afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Parrish. Person we would not be here today without.
Let me make one final comment, Mr. Chairman, if I may. Monica Backman has agreed to the agreement. So she's going to be with us through December of 2018.
Thank you.
Thank you, Monica.
We are, as I said, we are way over time. We have to do anything you need to update us on bylaws?
So, Mr. Chairman, real quick on item 12, if everybody looks to page 2, based on our discussion last month, there were two small changes, one that Senator Evan called out about who appoints the Senate members to MPCA, and the second in response to a request that we tried for the appointment of members to committees to reflect sort of the diversity of views among our members. And so there's no vote on this tonight because of a timing issue, but those changes are now incorporated in the document, and it will be before you at your January meeting when you can all, say, hooray, we have updated bylaws.
Thank you for talking to you. But maybe you should come.
I'm taking this Amtrak trip. I'll probably be somewhere between Jacksonville and West Palm Beach.
What I will say is we had some discussions this last month. We are revamping some of our committees. We are also on the Finance Committee, the one committee that's basically staying the same. Terms are coming to an end. I want every member to give some thought to what committee they'd like to be on, or better yet, committees. We'd like to have more committee appointments than we have members. And that's something we can discuss later, but just give it some thought. Ms. Backman, Mr. Longhi, committee chairs, anything we need to add that will keep Mrs. Gross happy?
No. We're adjourned.
We're adjourned. Thank you.